Red flag. Oh, there we go. So we'll start with the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
7:22.
Okay. Did everybody get a chance to look at the minutes? Do we have a motion for the April 5th meeting?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Do we have a motion for April 11th meeting?
I'll move it.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? I would just like to say I was really impressed with this meeting. We had 12 legislators show up and work on plastic bag, and I think that was kind of very special and impressive.
I didn't even realize
until
I got home that it was a majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. Yeah, I was kind of wondering.
Should we take a vote?
So, all in favor?
I know.
Okay. Okay, so Dave's was 61?
Yep.
Yeah.
So how are we going to...
And he's pretty much going to withdraw that. No, yes. Just waiting to... Yeah, just no action.
So just no action. Okay. So then we have Resolution 120, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 10 of 2018, a local law promoting the use of reusable bags and regulating the use of plastic carryout bags and recyclable paper carryout bags to be held on Tuesday, May 8, 2018.
Wait, that can't be right.
6 p.m.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah, but we'll have to change the date. I didn't change.
I'm sorry. It's June 19th. Somehow I have that.
So June 19th.
We're going to do that on session night?
No, it's June 19th on the resolution. I just have it wrong on the agenda. It's right on your gold sheet, and it's right on the resolutions in your packet.
Okay. So do we have somebody to move it?
I'll move it.
I'll second it for discussion.
Okay.
So everybody should have in the packet a draft that's stamped draft.
And something paper clips to it.
And if we can work off that, because I tried to incorporate the changes we discussed, and then I also have an addendum page that has some additional sample language to be considered by the committee. I want to introduce, for anyone who doesn't know, Jeremy Cherson's here from Riverkeeper. Is it okay if Jeremy comes to the table?
Sure.
Just to offer whatever input as we go through. Thank you. That's great. And I do want to, but that'll be under new business, to talk about the clean sweep, but it connects back because it has to do with plastic bags. So I want to, before we go into the details of the draft, I did meet with the executive, and as we go through, I'll talk about the executive's comments. I met with the executive and with Ken Cornell. He was supportive of the measure. We talked through the details, some of what Brian brought up, especially in terms related to cost enforcement and the hearing officer, which as we come to, I think it's best if we go through from beginning to end. As we get to those sections, I can talk about some of what he brought up. And then also Jordan Christensen connected me. Yesterday I got to speak with Chris Sortino, who's the chief of the Bureau of Public Health Protection in Suffolk County. Suffolk County's law went into effect January 1st, and he went on vacation today, so he's gone on vacation for 2 weeks, but hopefully when he's back, the executive's office will get a chance to speak with him. I'll tell the committee of his experience of the first months of the law, because I think it's very encouraging. Suffolk's a much bigger county, and as he talked me through their experience, it heartened me for what potentially we're gonna face. So, if we could start at the beginning and flip through to where you see notes or red marks, that would be great. And then we can also probably at the end talk about the governor's proposal, which I know Jeremy can speak to from the perspective of a lot of the state organizations. And I spoke to Jordan about it, and probably you've had working meetings with Jordan, so you have a pretty... You're in a consensus. You're on the same page. Okay. So the first change that I incorporate is on page 3, section 3. We talked about including farmers markets, open air, and open air flea markets, about expressly writing it in so there would be no confusion. So that's now included in the draft. I don't know how you want to handle it. Do you want everyone to just, do you want to just go through and, or as we go, if anyone has an issue, they could raise, join the conversation. Okay. The next section, some of these were technical changes. Section 5, we added the words a minimum. That's more of a technical change, a minimum of 5 cents, because it allows
section
the stores.
Yeah.
I mean, section 6, yeah. Page 5. It allows the stores to charge more if the bags cost them more, or if they choose to. Section 7, Fawn helped me, because that was a section I put in, because I felt like that was the consensus based on the notes and my notes, that we were going to have the 2-week exemption period around Earth Day for the bags that are reusable to be given away free for promotion. But I know that was one where we debated more than others. So I'm open to discussion. But for the purpose of discussion, I changed it because we needed to remove the 1-month period that needed to be stricken regardless. And then I put in a 2-week period that ends on Earth Day. I'm not invested in what time it is. So if the committee or the legislature chooses a different time or not to do it. I mean, I think there really is a benefit to having a promotional period to, on an annual basis, just, you know, reviving the issue and exciting the public, but I'm open.
Why don't you explain again why you're not allowed, because that was one of the things that was, because I didn't get it at first, but now I get it, because I give out free reusable bags to my, and that was, so I'm not going to be able to do that anymore.
The rest of the time.
Which is fine.
I'll explain it to you. You can give them out, which would essentially be giving them out for a minimum of five cents.
Yeah, now I'll just have to
charge 5 cents. But you can't give them out free, and the reason that you can't give them out free is too often that allowance was used as a loophole to give away bags just over the ML threshold.
Yeah.
And so the stores that could bear the burden were giving away the bags that were just over the threshold, which the most extreme example of that is Chicago's law, which in its first iteration, Chicago enacted a ban only, and when they did that, all of the big chain stores moved to MLs that were just over the limit, and as a result, Chicago increased by many-fold their plastic bag waste in a very short period of time. They no longer have that. Now they've switched to the fee, but it's to prevent bad players from using it as a loophole. That's the short of it.
Yeah, I just want for everybody. I didn't understand that at first caught me, but then when you guys explained it, I felt like it had to be there.
So the next page, page 6. Okay. Enforcement. In the meeting, this was one of the key points of the discussion with the executive's office. The executive expressed a desire to allow him the most latitude possible to determine which department to designate as the enforcement, or multiple departments, however, because it's going to involve promulgating rules and regulations. That's what I reflected in this draft as best I could. I want to hear what the committee feels about it. I can say that there are examples of both types of legislation, both in our county's laws and in others' counties' laws, where things are left very open, just that it will be enforced and someone's gonna figure it out at the county, or it's very specific. Joe, if you want to jump in.
When we talked about that, I mean, we're going over all the stuff we've already talked about. A lot of us were there. Mm-hmm. But Jordan...
Mm-hmm.
Was really helpful on that, and we all, a lot of us there, felt as though this was not the type of thing you needed a lot of enforcement on, almost any at all. You're not going to have box stores, you're not going to have Target giving out plastic bags, you're not going to have, you know, and the risk you run by not having enforcement would be a small restaurant somewhere still using plastic bags, which we were all kind of willing to live with, that we were going to be getting rid of 90% of plastic bag usage,
right,
without enforcement at all. So I wasn't as concerned. If we're going to do any enforcement, it was going to be small. We were going to have one person either add it to
weights and measures
or something like that. So enforcement doesn't hold me up. I'm literally comfortable going forward with virtually no enforcement, and that's what we've seen in other counties, I think. Maybe he can help us with that, that they've literally not – they've had almost 100% compliance with no enforcement.
Yeah, a lot of counties and towns, like you look at Newcastle and Westchester, they added it to – a responsibility for an existing employee.
And this is probably a time. So the executive also spoke, and then I'm going to back into Suffolk because it's connected. Did you want to?
I just, on enforcement, it's kind of a shame in this case that that the agency is as independent as it is because they already have an enforcement officer. But I don't, you know, if that's the case, wherever it resides, it should not be burdensome. I can't imagine needing a whole other position.
So, and I'll speak to that. So the executive spoke about the possibility of the legislation including new positions, because in that conversation, this is without the executive speaking to Suffolk, there was the, and I said, I went as saying that this committee and the 12 that met really felt we wanted to be clear that we were not looking for the plastic bag police, that we were looking for an on-complaint basis, et cetera. He expressed the possibility that it would take one to two positions and suggested the possibility of putting it in the legislation. I did not put it in the legislation because, for a number, several reasons. One, if it is determined that we need positions, that would be a function of the budget cycle. It's 2019, so that would be a part of the budget process. But when I spoke to Suffolk, which is a very big county, this I'm gonna go through my notes from what Chris Sortino said. So he expressed that when he first heard that they were put in charge of enforcement, he was very concerned because he's the board of, you know, he's under the Bureau of Health, Public Health Protection. So the agency, similar to our county, has no current stand to have an interface with these types of stores on a regular basis. It's not like they're going, it's not like going in to inspect a restaurant. We're talking about retail establishments, many of whom are governed by Ag and Markets. He said that the first 2 weeks of the year were very stressful, that the office received many phone calls, and he was very worried that there were calls from one store complaining about another store, calls from the public angry that they got charged, calls from et cetera, and he said within 2 weeks it started to drop off, and now it's down to almost nothing, that he gets one or two calls a week, that they have the initial reports, which he's going to send me, of their compliance suggest that they have very high compliance rates. He told me that they utilized high school interns to stand outside prior to the inauguration of the law, to stand outside stores and manually count the bags that were coming out because they expect that they're going to resend them out at the six-month and the one-year mark to count the bags to try to get a real on-the-ground incentive and to engage the youth population. He said they're totally operating from a by-complaint basis, what this committee talked about. Development of regulations, because their law was pretty broad. They are approaching the first 6 months of the legislation as an education period, so they will not be issuing any fines at all in the first 6 months. They are issuing warnings that they're counting toward a three-strike policy. And so he said they've had to issue very few warnings, but they're doing the outreach, and They've determined internally how they're going to do the hearing system because they already have a hearing officer at Food Protection. And he reiterated again, this is not a lot of work at all. We did not hire one new person in Suffolk County, and it's not a big problem at all. So, and he began by saying, I basically was petrified and overwhelmed, but it's fine. It's great. So, and he's going to get us new numbers. He's going to get us the previous numbers. It was really, I found the conversation very heartening because they're a much bigger county. And I spoke to Jordan, and Jeremy can probably speak to other communities, and she said that that's been the model pretty much in communities across the state, that she couldn't think of offhand a community that did extra hiring to deal with this enforcement.
I haven't heard of this from any of the towns in Westchester that have done this.
Okay, so...
So Suffolk is 4 months into this?
Mm-hmm.
Now,
four.
They're still within, though, aren't they? Did they have a transition time, like we talked about, letting retailers use their inventory?
Oh, yeah.
And have they completed that yet?
Yeah, the law is in effect.
So they're 5 months into the ban.
That went
by Jan 1, and so this was, they began this, I guess. In,
yeah, I don't know. When was it announced that the law was going into effect? Do you know when they passed the law? I don't know. I didn't ask, but it was months. I mean, I remember hearing about that law months out. So I would imagine it was months of time before it actually went into effect. But January 1 is when it went live. So, did you have a question, Amanda?
I think education is important.
Me too.
If we're going to do a position, empower the person who's doing the education to also have enforcement.
I think we can talk about...
Then if somebody actually breaks a law, we have a process to handle them. Mm-hmm. But they could give several warnings and do more education and then refer it to the legal system if it has to.
Are you saying we're creating a position?
I am not. Oh. I don't think it's necessary.
I don't either.
But if there's going to be, you said that Mike thought it might, that the county executive thought it might be one or two positions. And I'm just saying if by budget cycle we're creating a position, that the emphasis should be on education with enforcement.
But I think we're hoping to go back to the exec's people and say, this is what's going on in these other counties right now.
You're just saying if it came
forward,
to being a position.
I'm comfortable moving forward. I think Tracy is, without creating a position at this point. If we get to a point, in my opinion, where we go, man, if it's not as smooth as Suffolk, it's not as smooth as the other places, I don't foresee that happening, then we can go ahead and, I mean, worst case scenario, we can go into contingency and create it immediately or the next year, but what we run the risk of is having a couple of people out of compliance for a little while. We're still at 97%, whatever it would be. So
Man is just saying that
if
we did wind up creating a job, that she
would make it
focused on education.
Well, I think right now we're talking about maybe not going forward without it. I'd love to not.
No, I would too, and I also, on top of that, it's rare in local laws, when you look through our administrative code, it's rare that local laws, as a part of the local law itself, create positions. They create the policy, and then the positions are a function of creating the budget and the follow-on. It's an important discussion to have, but like I said, I'm very happy to hear. We're certainly a smaller county than Suffolk. I can't imagine that we have many, many less stores that we'd be covering, so the fact that they're able to do it with no additional people, and it makes me think positively moving forward. One thing that the executive brought up, which is we're going to discuss later, and I think it was brought up in committee in various brief discussions last time, but I put it on the extra page to talk about, is the possibility of a rollout, not the rollout that in terms of the time to use down existing product, but a rollout in terms of beginning with the, I'll just call them the bigger box stores, and then moving into the mom and pops. We have to, and I think it's a
like a staggered.
Yes, which is what we did with polystyrene foam. We didn't do big box. We did chain stores, and then everyone else 6 months later. The executive expressed that the desire for that kind of rollout in terms of easing the transition both on the businesses and on the county, because if we began with the bigger stores, the one example, it's funny, Chicago is the one that did this, but Chicago, you can't find their original legislation anymore for some reason. Jordan, we searched all day. We found the current So the we couldn't find the language of the rollout, but they did a rollout that began with stores over certain square footage. In my proposed language on the other page, I just wrote stores over 10,000 square feet, and then 6 months later, covered stores, all covered stores. So it would be, obviously we'd be capturing the bulk of plastic bag usage because all grocery stores pretty much would be included in the initial phase. And it's something that this committee and the legislature are going to have to decide if it's something that that you want to see happen and that we think will make the legislation more palatable to the legislature as a whole.
And an easier transition.
And an easier transition for our businesses, then I'm open, absolutely open to that discussion. We can do that when we get there. But if you want to talk about it now, too.
How are these surrounding counties that have done it? How have they done it? Have they've just put everybody in? You do a six-month or one-year, you know, build-up where people know what's coming, they can use through their inventory. But are they rolling it out with certain stores blocked?
Or Chicago is the
only one.
Chicago is the only example.
It's the only example I can find, too.
I mean, California state law, as soon as the law went into effect, everyone was covered.
Well, if we're moving forward without creating position, it seems simpler to me. It seems like you make it more likely that you're going to be inundated with phone calls with certain businesses going, wait, who doesn't have to do it now? They have to do it. We don't have to do it. I just assume I'm comfortable with where we're at, but I'm not as, I mean, I could go, I'm okay with it either way. Whatever the majority wants, I'm okay with.
And the primary purpose was to make it easier on the smaller retail establishments? Is that what he cited?
I think his primary reason was to make it easier on the county for enforcement, that and then second, to make it easier on the businesses, that the transition. I mean, I think when we did polystyrene foam,
cool.
we had, and when Mary and I in the lead up to it, when we were researching it, and then once it became public, we were talking about it, it was on the agenda, we were having conversations, we were getting calls from many of the chain stores, and it became apparent, I mean, from their corporate headquarters.
Corporate was already...
And it became apparent pretty
had
quickly...
Had already seen on the horizon.
That we were not going to have a problem.
Where local businesses did not really see that. Where they had seen it and were preparing for it. Like Dunkin' Donuts' biggest concern was timing.
They
didn't have a problem with it. They had
and products.
They just were
they
worried
want,
about... Yeah.
They didn't want the compostable requirement.
So I think if we're charging the executive or the executive branch with the enforcement of this, I mean, it's not unreasonable to accept that as a term if we're not putting in position. You know, if they have a concern, you know, it's up to them to enforce it. So I think that's something that could be worked with. I mean, it's deferred to them if they're looking to, if we're putting this onto them to enforce, and this is a request that they came back with. And you said it kind of, there's already a pattern for this in the county with the styrofoam. Mm-hmm. So...
You're right. I think it can be like slightly confusing, but I also think that it might pave the way a little bit.
Yeah, that's the other. I mean, there's an argument for taking the proverbial Band-Aid off quickly, but then there's also an argument that when the public sees this the biggest impact to the public is going to be when they go to a grocery store where they're used to getting 20 bags. So they're gonna know it's happening, and they're gonna hear this is the first phase. This is the beginning. It's happening everywhere. So
that's
get your bags ready.
That's kind of my concern.
Right.
All these different levels. Now we're already doing it's 6 months. You can move through your inventory. Now we're adding. How much money do we plan on spending on information? I mean, I think we can look to Raise the Age of Tobacco. I think you have money set aside already, and that's something you have to do. I mean, there's going to be real consequences there. And we're going to have to get to these stores that sell tobacco and inform them of this new law. So I don't think we'll have the amount of money, but we're going to have to get the word out somehow, especially if we're going to start doing all these different phases. That's what worries me. It just seems like we're already giving everyone time to move through their inventory. It really seems to me like we're only going to be complicating the whole process by saying, okay, first you have this much time, then at this date, this type of store can no longer do it, and there will be penalties at this date. Now, the under what the exec is requesting, he's requesting two people. Maybe he had that in mind that we were complicating it to a point that he was going to have these people out there. We've already decided we're almost going to have no, at least to start, like these other areas have done, we're not going to have any extra staffing to go out, inform, talk to, give warnings. You know, you aren't compliant. Oh, I know that kind of store doesn't have to do this yet, but you do. I think if we're not gonna do those positions, which I think is the way to go. But like I said, it's not gonna hold me back from voting. But I would definitely be towards not.
I don't understand what the phase is.
We had
the
discussion the other night.
I'm sorry, Kathy. I'm sorry.
At the prior meeting, I agree with Joe. I think it'd be simpler to just have a single date, but it's not a breaking point for me. So if the exec feels strongly, or if the, you know, we want to.
I do think it probably will pass through the legislature easier with a transition time. I could be wrong, but.
Can I make the suggestion that we leave this one for discussion? I'll go back to the executive's office, and we'll go to our respective caucuses and get a temperature of the respective caucuses. Because I feel, as Joe and Kathy do, I prefer the clean break, but just because the message is very clear. But it's not a breaking point for me. If it really is for the executive's office or for other legislators, I'm willing to compromise.
That's what I'm thinking, that it will make it an easier selling point to people
we
to do it that way. But we can find out that it's not.
Whoever, you know, you vote one way or the other.
Manna?
Well, I just didn't understand what the details of what the proposed phase in, like,
I can tell you.
Is it initially?
So if you look on the extra page, it's the proposed law. I mean, the proposed language is the effective date. Again, this is open for discussion, but I just wrote that it would take effect for covered stores whose square footage exceeds 10,000 square feet on Earth Day, April 22nd, 2019. Subsequently, this local law shall take effect for all covered stores on November 22nd, 2019. I picked 6 months from that day. All these dates are open for discussion on that.
Okay, I didn't see that.
I apologize. Yeah, I know I was kind of jumping ahead, but it was a part of the conversation with the executive. So,
can I also just take a little bit of a step backwards? I love the April 22nd kickoff. That's great, but I think that in terms of April celebrations, as people who April's always a busy month for some of us. I think that we might consider the 15th through the 30th because of Arbor Day.
You're talking about the 2 weeks.
The two weeks. It's just a footnote. I meant to say it, and I was distracted.
That's great. What day is Arbor Day? I'm sorry, I should know that.
27.
Okay.
So if we went from the 15th to the 30th.
Okay.
It would be sort of the peak environmental celebration season.
Can we get a consensus at the table? Everybody
sure,
okay.
I'm fine with that.
Okay.
I have no opinion. I'm good with that.
Okay.
And the other thing I want us to think about, and I'm not sure where it fits in the law, but that came out of that last meeting, was the idea of bring your own bag, sort of calling this, referring to this.
There is a title.
And they've used that in other areas, I believe, right?
We were going to change the section to title.
I don't even care if it says it in the law, but I want people to get used to calling it BYOB, and when we have the signs that we are, I think, going to be providing to or allowing people to download and post so that it's the county's responsibility. Okay. It's not their decision.
Some of these areas.
I just want to get that BYOB
legislation.
Bring your own bag.
I wouldn't. I'd be down with that.
It's a fun section one. So we back. We back up to section one title. Do you want to change it to this? Can I make a suggestion, and then we can can decide. So this local law shall be known by and may be cited as the BYO bag Ulster County, or do you just want to have Bring Your Own Bag Act?
And then in parentheses, BYO.
So do you want Bring Your Own Bag? What does everybody want? Bring Your Own Bag Act?
Bring Your Own Bag Act, and you could put parentheses BYO bag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you don't want BYOB.
No.
Yeah.
No beer.
That's right. Or a bottle.
Maybe wine.
Okay. Thank you for humoring me.
And then we can use the, you know,
hashtag
scare quotes.
But yeah, when we
the logo kind of thing for the
like hashtag or you know something
the acronym.
The acronym. That's the word I'm saying. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll change that. That will be reflected.
Okay.
And we'll change April 15th to April 30th. Okay, so back to page 6, section 9. We're talking about section 9 enforcement. I kept it, to the previous point, I kept it as open as possible, just saying that the county executive shall designate a county department or departments and that they'll promulgate rules. And then we added that a copy of the rules and regulations, we're going to try to the legislative clerk's office asked for this, and we're going to be trying to do this in legislation moving forward just for the communication between both sides of the sixth floor. So just simply asking that a copy will be provided to the clerk.
Now, do we run the risk of wording it this way in the law of saying if we really don't want to add staff by saying county executive shall designate a county department or departments to have primary responsibility for enforcement of this chapter, do they then have the ability to go ahead and create the positions that they?
Yeah, I mean it's going to be a part of the budget process, you know. Okay. So that's standard.
Approve, but okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And you know what? That's totally in the purview of the executive's office. I mean, that's what the budget process is about. Is about weighing. Priorities and then coming to the legislature with their proposal. So I think that's an appropriate place. And if in the course of that,
it could
they
potentially
come to us,
even include something else that he's, or you know, like that position could include something else, and it could be just a small part and happen to be a new position.
Yeah.
So we can kind of deal with that if it comes up.
So that follows on for section the changes in section 10 on page 7. I just made it neutral and removed any reference to a specific department and still allowed for the schedule of fines. And that falls on to the next page, just taking us through section the rest of section 10, just again keeping it neutral. We passed through, but you'll see that I did strike previous section 8, the record keeping and inspection, we talked about that, so that's out. Now, in committee, if everyone refers to the, and then I put in the effective date of April 22nd, 2019, I think we're still on track for that to be an okay day. If something happens where the law is delayed, we'd have to...
When you said April 15th,
oh, no, that's for the exemption period, but for the law to take effect April 22nd, 2019, on Earth Day in 19, for the actual, you know, effective date.
And that actually would be good, because they're giving out bags just prior to.
Which would mean if we passed it in, if we have a public hearing in June, if it passes in July, you have the rest of the year and the first, you know, almost 4 months of the following year, so you're looking at July. Well, it depends on when in July we pass it. So, okay, so not to get bogged down in the week. So on this, the additional page, a couple of quick things to discuss. We had talked about where the appeals procedure would live effectively. And there are examples of legislation that lay it out. The recycling law, back which Manna was a part of drafting, lays out the appeals procedure. We have county laws that don't lay it out. The executive asked for the latitude to have that be part of the rules and regulations. Suffolk County's law is reflective of something like this. It doesn't lay out where, but there is an appeals process. It's just not in the law. So the fact that if we don't put the appeals process fully laid out in the law, it does not in any way mean that there will not be an appeals process. You know, the law states that if you speed over a certain, that you will be ticketed, but it doesn't state what you have to do to appeal that. So that's a part of the rules and regulations. So if we're going to honor the executive's request, we would leave it out and leave it up to the executive to determine where that's going to live and how it's going to best function, but rest assured that the law would both be enforced and that people fined would have an appeals process. This is an example of what an appeals process would look like if we demanded to put it in and specified it. But I did not feel comfortable with naming who would do it because I don't feel we're qualified, and that really is operations. And since the executive's asking that we don't put it in and specify, I thought it best to leave it out, but I didn't want to not have the conversation with the committee. So that's what that language is. The next section where it says additional language is just something I felt I couldn't ignore. It's the first time I saw it as I was looking through to find sample language for appeals. We can put it in or not. I only saw it in one example. I can't even remember what example it was. It could have been Suffolk, but I feel like it was probably somewhere out west. And what it's prohibiting is it's prohibiting a store from deducting wages from an employee to offset a fine. In other words, if a store is fined, the store couldn't go to the employee that gave out the bag on the store's directive and say, we're going to dock your pay $500 because we have this fine. I hadn't seen it before. I don't think it's a large problem, but I also recognized it as a protection I didn't imagine.
Well, yeah.
needing.
Yeah. Well, so, but there is a concern that if you have an employee that doesn't really think this law is stupid and decides to start giving bags out, there's no... Do you know what I mean? I mean, they could get fired or whatever, but there should almost be some type of deterrent for them to do that. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, if they're... This is basically saying that they have no consequence if they give away bags.
I think there should be, and that should be... That's up to the owner of the business. I really do. I mean, and that happens. We can come
well, this,
up with
this wording a little
scenario.
Bit
yeah.
kind
I think
of,
just,
I think...
I think we just leave it out then. We just... Because yeah. It's not, I think it's not it standard of, language elsewhere, so let's just ignore it. That's
I think
why
this
I just
kind of...
This
kind of, I think, interprets the employee being protected...
But we're worried about the business being protected against a rogue employee.
Yeah.
I'm fine not putting it in because it's not standard language. I just want, in the interest of sharing all that I come across, I wanted to have the conversation.
In all these types of situations, we leave a lot of latitude to the enforcement officer.
Mm-hmm.
They can go in and decide not to give a fine, to find them guilty, not to even give them a fine. And if they had a business owner that was saying, geez, I'm an environmental... guy or gal, and I didn't know this person was giving out these bags. I don't
smuggling
think they're going to get fined any. It's
right,
not like
right,
they're going to say,
right,
well, $1,000
right,
bucks, and
right.
these, you know.
Okay, so let's just, if there's consensus, let's just not even address it. And
yeah, I'm okay with that.
That's
I just really
one.
Don't feel they should get a total
that's
pass
fine.
That the employer doesn't have
and
any.
And it doesn't take any rights away from the employer. So can I get... the temperature of the committee in terms of the appeals procedure, what everybody thinks? Or is everybody fine leaving it out of the legislation?
Fine.
Okay. Me too. Okay. So that's it. I mean, that's working through.
And now, something on the back about the restaurants?
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. That's it. Yeah, that's a big one.
Thank you.
So that was one. We, as a committee, I just wanted to provide the sample language. We, as a committee... had and the 12 when you looked at the notes of the vote, the unofficial vote we took, we wanted to see no exemptions. There, I mean, there were some. Mary, I think you were one who wanted
for
to see an exemption for restaurants. I mean, I'm just going to call them restaurants.
Right.
These are two examples of language that allows for that exemption in case that became a point of discussion as we're taking. Getting feedback from our respective caucuses. The first is the way it's worded. The first, I think, is the way it's worded in Suffolk, and the second, I think, is the way it's worded in some of the communities out west.
Now, does Suffolk include food service?
No. Right? Suffolk doesn't.
I don't think so. I think it's just stores.
Yeah, no restaurants.
And they've gotten fewer complaint calls now, right?
Probably. Yeah, so they get almost no complaint calls.
So that seems to be working. If they're exempting restaurants, maybe that's helping on that end.
Yeah, I mean, so, the exemption for restaurants is certainly widespread in cities and larger communities because of the takeout business and the concept of food that would get wet or leak. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, you look in New York City, you see many, many food service delivery people riding on bicycles with paper bags inside plastic bags as they're bringing the food, and the worry in those cases is that, I think that's really where it begins, is about leakage. But for me, it's not, as I expressed last time, I prefer there to be no exemption, but I understand why there are exemptions, and it's certainly, I mean, maybe you could speak to whether, if that, is it more normal to have the exemption, or what?
I don't see many communities that cover, I mean, I would certainly support everyone being covered, mm-hmm. but most of the laws exempt restaurants. And that might just because the volume that is coming out of grocery stores, you know, you have people with families coming out with 12 to 20 plastic bags, but when you're getting takeout, you're usually getting one bag. Mm-hmm. So it's just a volume.
You also know a lot of your restaurant owners, a lot of restaurant owners involved locally. It's a lot easier to tell Target than...
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, friend.
Oh, yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
And you don't want it, yeah.
But that being said, I agree with Tracy. So I think this is another thing that we leave up to it, whether we do an amendment, if we amend it to not or cover restaurants or not cover restaurants, and we just do it that way, we let everybody mm-hmm. decide, the majority decide. That's how I see it.
My only concern is that there are a lot of stores that are primarily for other products that have a restaurant. So... How, you know, I don't want them
both of these languages wouldn't include those. Because the first one yeah. speaks to food service establishments that are located outside of those stores.
Oh,
and the
okay.
second
it
one says...
is 90%.
Which I actually think the second one's more explicit, but I feel like we probably should talk to legal about which is better okay. and if there is a better way to word it. But the second one really says that... It's a restaurant, a takeout food establishment, or any business that receives 90% or more of its revenue from the sale of prepared food. And that's the key, prepared food versus, you know, bags of apples and pasta
raw
meats and et cetera.
Yeah, since we're voting on this tonight to go to a public hearing, I think at a public hearing, if we had this exemption in there, it would maybe allay the fears of some people who would come to speak to us at that public mm-hmm. hearing. And I think it would increase maybe the chance of this being embraced more than rejected more. Because you're going to have everybody coming up saying, every time I get food, it leaks all over my car. If it really doesn't impact the plastic going into the waste stream, but it will, in a large way, but it will help us get this through,
yes.
then I think it's worth it. And building on the point that was said earlier, Suffolk County, you said it's going smoothly. They're 4 months into this, right? And so why wouldn't we want to model our legislation as closely to
yeah.
that as we possibly can? So I think it's a reasonable compromise.
I think it makes it also look to the public like it's a reasonable...
Yeah.
Look, let me ask this. If we put it to a public hearing with restaurants being treated as every other type of business... And then we put it to public hearing the other way with it out. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference going forward? Would we have to have
another public hearing
if we pull it?
I can tell you most certainly
so,
if it's out and we put it in, we would have to have a public
so
hearing.
So if we're still considering doing it, we might not need it.
I mean, even though it's substantive, it's covered.
It's
But it's kind of easier to take it out.
It's definitely easier to, I mean, in terms of the second.
We could ask legal about that. I bet we could pull it out and not put it back in.
We definitely can't put it back in. There's no question. Yeah.
If it helps. I'm sorry,
but could we have a quick meeting before the vote? to...
Okay, I thought you were going to go to your caucus. I didn't realize we were...
That's what I'm saying. If we go to our caucus... If
but we schedule a meeting...
If we go to our caucus and we set a meeting for session night or before and come up with what which way we're going with it.
Yeah.
I think or no, it has. We have to know before it goes out for public hearing.
I think you have before to know when you vote on it tonight. I don't know if you can change it after you vote to send it to a public hearing.
No, no, no. What Mary's suggesting is that we go to our we go to our caucuses with these two issues next Tuesday, and then we have a special meeting before session where we vote on the final wording that we will vote on in session.
We could do that.
Because then we would know where we...
We have time. I mean, we could go to our caucuses and just resolve these last little details.
That's what Mary said.
And then we'll have a special meeting, just like maybe, you know.
No, I meant we would resolve it at our June meeting, because this isn't going into effect.
I think that, I mean, I would advocate, just because we're finally moving along, and these are important decisions, but I don't think they should hold us a month. I think we should determine on these two issues what we're going to do and move to a public hearing, vote for on the public hearing this month for June, because otherwise then we're in, you know, then we're talking about July voting, or then we're into August. And,
because it'll be a very quick meeting, because we'll have a consensus of what way we're going to go. I mean, it'll be a quick discussion of how we're going to, you know, put it
in or out. If that's the only issue.
Yeah.
It'll be a long...
Right, yep. right.
Yeah, Lynn, I'm fine with that.
Where are you on it with the restaurant? And Lynn, where are you on it, if you don't mind me asking?
With the restaurant?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think if the best practice in other places is to exempt them... I think of my own local area deli that I go to, and I've already gotten an earful about the plastic bag, so... I think there are going to be lots of people in the community who are shocked by a, you know, sudden sort of, that's, you know, whichever way you guys go, I think this is the right thing to do. But I think if that's best practice, then, well, I think we're going to have, I don't know, Brian, I mean, I think we're going to have some kickback.
Oh, we certainly are.
Right.
But if we have this in the legislation, it'll... mitigate that.
Yeah.
How about Kathy and Manna? Where are they? I know me and Tracy were leaning one way. We have three leaning the other. Maybe we could figure it out here. If you guys are all going restaurant.
I agree with Jeremy that I'd like to see people manage, like I'm starting to bring food containers into the restaurant, and then without a plastic bag, that sealed container goes in my car and it's fine. That's in an ideal world, but in this real world, I'm fine. I just want to figure out which is the best way to word the exemption.
I think that's right. I just want to be clear. It's not a deal breaker for me, whichever way you go.
Kathy, where do you
I think that a lot of restaurants could comply, so I hate to leave it out. But I think there were people at the April 14th meeting who felt strongly about this issue that we should exempt the restaurants.
Herb was the one.
Herb and Dave, I think.
Dave was
also
talking about leaving his car, too, I think. Or that was Herb.
That was Herb.
And we've heard that others feel that it would be helpful. So I think put it in. And, you know, if the
and it also doesn't stop. It doesn't stop a food service that wants to be more progressive from saying, you know, we don't have to, but we're not going to use plastic bags.
I just want to mention one other thing. My big concern was the big chains, Burger King and, you know, McDonald's and stuff like that.
Burger King.
But they use paper bags. So they're already in compliance.
But they'd have to charge 5 cents for that paper bag.
If we include them.
And they'd have to charge 5 cents for the Happy Meal box.
No, that's right.
If they're included.
I don't know about the box. I don't think that counts as a bag.
If we're excluding restaurants, it's not an issue anyway. And I very rarely patronize them, but I have recently on a couple occasions, and
it's
I was like,
thing,
oh, good, this is a paper bag. Anyway.
This is not just to, you know, this is to drive people. This is also to motivate the private sector to motivate their clientele to use less and to produce less waste. So we can't always look at it as, well, this is going to be very inconvenient, so let's stay away from that, or this is going to be a little more costly, so let's stay away from that. That is the driving force behind getting to where we're burying less. Mm-hmm. I mean, really.
I think that with the remember with the law against the sparklers, that the flying lanterns, we actually got into some question about whether or not we'd been sensitive to the ethnic practices, and it may be that you can put a hamburger in a paper bag a lot more easily than you can put a different type of food, and I think that, you know, the types of food that would be the most liquid do tend to come from restaurants that are ethnically identified. You know, Chinese food restaurants, that's the example that Dave used at the meeting before. Or Asian food, if you want to be. So I think those are the stores that I can think of that would have maybe a barbecue place, which isn't it. So
what about Italian food?
But I do think that that could be harder for some types of restaurants than for others. And what tends to happen with these laws is you get some cultural change, and then you can get some voluntary change. So I agree, and I think we should go for that. For all those reasons.
So is the consensus is basically that we should put
it's
the
still
exemption
easy.
In?
Yeah, but with the amendment ready to go, if the caucuses, if we decide that more people than not don't want it there.
You mean in a special meeting before session?
Yeah. That might be I think you're right.
Okay,
that.
So for now, we're going to put in the exemption. I'm leaning for the second. Does the second seem more specific to you? I mean, does anyone else here have an opinion? I would be leaning toward
between
the second.
The first or second?
Yeah.
Would you just add that
well,
to the
definitions? Well, the only reason I would say this about the second one, you're going to be looking for people to split hairs.
Yeah, right, with the
and
numbers. Okay.
With numbers. And this that opens the door for
clear.
That.
Yes.
So. Okay, so we'll go with the first.
Yeah, you're going to measure a potato salad.
Yeah. Okay.
It's difficult.
Yeah, I had other issues with it too, but okay. We'll go with the first.
So are we putting that first definition in the...
In the legislation, which would go in...
the definitions?
It would go in the definitions under... it would be the last line to cover store.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That's where it's typically seen. So that
you and I can talk about
it. You
this.
And I will talk about it, but it'll come right after covered store. So it's saying this term does not include... We're talking about covered store. Mm-hmm. So really the thing... that we have to work out is for the purpose of our vote right now, pending the possibility of needing a special meeting, do you want to leave the local law taking effect on one date, or do you want to put in the rollout option?
Which is set far enough off.
They're both set far. Yeah, they're both set
well
far
within
enough.
Whenever this gets passed in the next couple
of
months.
In one, everybody would be covered on April 22. In the other, stores over 10,000 square feet would be covered on April 22, and then subsequently, I think that Brian was the one you were deferring, saying if the executive wanted it, and Kathy and Joe, you said you preferred the clean break. I don't know what you wanted, Mary.
I'm going to change what I'm going to suggest. I think we should put it in there with the rollout, but then if we get a straw vote, maybe we can amend that on the floor. That's just, instead of two dates, let's have one.
Does that change the public hearing?
No. On the floor. So what I would suggest right now is the opposite, because I'm just much more, my negotiating skills say let's leave the one date in, and as we go to our caucuses, if it'll help to get people on with the two dates, then let's make that amendment on the floor. Like if we hear back from everyone, and I will, in the interim, I will meet with the executive. And whomever he chooses again.
Also, at caucus, we'll know before session, and we're going to do a special meeting.
Right. We won't need to do a special meeting because we can just amend that on the floor.
No, but we have to do it on the food service, right?
We could make both amendments on the floor on the day of, I believe. You could certainly make the date change on the floor because we're voting to set the public hearing a month out, so we'd be amending what's being noticed for the public hearing before we go.
That,
so we could definitely do it on the day of session. We won't need a special meeting, but we will need to know what we're doing. I'll meet with the executive, and I will report back to
the whole committee through you and Fawn to be circulated, what the executive's thinking on the date, and then we'll talk to our respective caucuses and make a decision.
Right.
But I think for today, leave the April 22. But Brian, I'm fully ready to do the rollout. That's what we did for polystyrene foam, and if that's what the bulk of us think is going to be easier, if that's what the executive, that's where we end up. That's where we end up.
So are we going to take no action tonight on this?
We're going to vote on it tonight. Okay. So that our caucuses can talk about it and it's on the agenda.
So is there any other discussion?
Not from me, but if anyone has any questions.
So then we'll call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
It's unanimous. Passed.
I can't vote, but...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Well done.
Because Jeremy's here, can I just quickly...
yeah, sure.
Give Jeremy the opportunity to talk about an amazing event that relates to plastic bags, and also as you're discussing it, you can talk about what plastic bags mean in our rivers and our waste we may be behind.
Sure, so what's getting passed around now?
I might need one more bag.
We need one bag, Joe.
I might not have printed enough.
I've got
an extra. Oh, you got it? Okay.
Saturday we have our seventh annual Riverkeeper Sweep, which is the largest cleanup of the Hudson. Our southmost cleanup is Red Hook, Brooklyn. Our northernmost is North Creek in the Adirondacks. So really far. It's really awesome. And we get up into the tributaries. And I printed out this little map of sites in Ulster County. Anyone is welcome to join on Saturday. You can visit riverkeeper.org/sweep to register for any of these sites. Most of these sites are organized by volunteers. So these are not Riverkeeper organized events. Volunteers come to us and say, we want to organize at this individual location. And they get all the permits. They deal with waste hauling. It's really incredible. This year we have the most number of cleanups we've had in our 7 years. We have 120 this year, which beats, we had 105 last year. So we're really pushing it this year. It's just such a fantastic event. And this year is the first time we've really tied it to something, and we're tying it to plastic bags. So every single site across the entire Hudson River estuary is getting petitions to the governor supporting the exact type of policy that you're pursuing here in Ulster County, which is a ban on plastic and a fee on paper. And so we're going to be collecting those petitions that folks are going to send back to us. People at this event can take it home, get petition signatures from their neighbors, from their friends, send it back to Riverkeeper, and on June 6th, we're holding a lobby day in Albany where we're going to deliver all these petitions to the governor's office and meet with legislators in Albany, and I'm working to set that up now with a large coalition, including Jordan from Citizens Campaign and a whole host of other people. So hope folks can come, and it's really exciting that it's our biggest, and we're also tying it into this event that's really relevant and part of the statewide discussion from every small municipality to the governor's office.
Yeah, that's very exciting. And then you'll have numbers for us too, which will
also
be exciting.
Last year was the first year where we started collecting anecdotal evidence. We picked 20 sites to do shoreline surveys of exactly what they found, quantity, and estimated weight. And this will be the second year, and so we'll be able to have a comparison at the same sites, and we're expanding to a few more sites that will continue next year. And so the goal is within a few years to roll out the survey across the entire estuary so we can really get some longer-term anecdotal data on what people are finding.
Great. And just an update, Westchester County, right, is proposing a similar law that includes a polystyrene ban.
They're going to put the polystyrene, I learned at the press conference that I was at a couple weeks ago, is going to be a separate piece of legislation.
Okay.
Yeah, they decided that
like
it was a little too ambitious to combine both in one piece of legislation.
And
so
Nassau is set to bring forward similar legislation to plastic bag legislation. So I'm excited that
we're married.
And I'm going to just pass this around to people.
Can we switch this?
Sound like a good idea?
And
the styrofoam?
The plastic bag
plastic
So it's a good thing. Yeah.
And I think, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So in terms of the governance,
oh, okay, wait.
If, if it gets passed, then it takes away all the...
It does.
So the so the governor's proposal, which was a shock to many of us...
It's all one thing.
Oh, I get all three?
No, what you're looking at.
Oh.
Bans plastic bags, but does not include the a fee policy on alternatives, which is, in our research, not a very effective policy, especially if you've heard what's what happened in Chicago and Honolulu. So all the environmental groups are currently sending around a sign-on letter that details why we support the fee policy and cannot support legislation that is just a ban because of the experience groups have had with that. And that language and those points will be conveyed on our lobby day as well, that I'm expecting large turnout to. So we'll be meeting with a lot of members. Given the politics in Albany right now, I don't think we're going to see much legislation, let alone plastic bag legislation, this session. So I think we would, if anything, we'd see something next year. And we're very adamant that any state law could only preempt local law if it was equal to or stronger. And so with that, that is unanimous amongst the environmental groups. We have a biweekly call. So with that position, I think it will be very hard for that language to get passed. So what you do here will, I feel very strongly, will remain.
And we'll hopefully have an impact on that discussion.
Absolutely.
As more communities are adopting.
It'll help Westchester move faster. I saw a Dutchess County legislator post something about plastic bags recently, so hopefully it'll spread across the estuary.
Thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so...
thank you all for spending the time and the work to this.
Yep.
I'll take the 61 and then you can sign the 120.
Okay, and then we have Resolution 157, adopting proposed local law number 8 of 2018, a local law amending local law number 6 of 2014 to improve and strengthen the sustainable energy loan program. Do we have a motion?
I'll make the motion.
A second? Brian?
So, I'm sorry, it was moved by
Tracy and Brian.
Again, we had that public hearing.
So do we have any discussion? Yeah.
I still don't quite fully understand this in its entirety and how it'll work. If you could give me kind of a hypothetical of whatever business, walk me through how it's going to work.
The reason this is getting amended is that the previous language didn't create enough opportunity for businesses to participate. There were too many denials, so they expanded the language to include more opportunities for businesses to use property-assessed clean energy financing. The organization is Energize, and the entity that the county has joined is the Energy Improvement Corporation, and we did that a couple years ago. But basically, this is being revised to allow more widespread use. And what that property assessed clean energy does is allows a business to essentially take a loan to do a major energy retrofit or install a solar system or any other form of energy savings or clean energy, renewable energy generation. I'm not sure if it would cover storage or not. And then pay that back with the revenue that they're saving. They can't, it used to be, it couldn't be more than 10% of the value of the property, and I believe it's up to 30% now. So it's not risky in that the business is assured that they will be able to pay this back with either the electricity they generate from renewables or the savings that they reap because they did a major energy retrofit of some sort. Yes, they can still go to a bank, but I think the PACE financing system is a little bit easier. They do, essentially, their property is the collateral. But this transfers, if they sold their property, because it's on the tax roll and it's associated with the property ownership, if they sell their business before the loan is paid off, it transfers with it.
The repayment is actually on your tax bill.
It's on the tax bill.
You don't
this
write
is like
a
public beneficiary corporation type deal, the way this functions?
It is, in a sense. It's really that the reason we had to pass a law is for the county to establish this financing mechanism. And it's a separate line on the tax bill that indicates it's for the Sustainable Energy Loan Program. And it stays with the property, and the whole purpose of this resolution, which has been adopted by some of the other counties, like Orange County, came on after we did. So I think they came on with the newer version. And also the Energy Improvement Corporation had to go through the state to get this approved. And it's really just a very direct, simple financing option. I am not an expert on it. I can put you in touch with Sarah Smiley, who's our representative for this area.
Yeah.
But that was how they explained to me why we are amending it. It's really to allow more widespread participation.
All right, I'm
going
to have to.
And you know what? I can resend you the point bullet by bullet, which unfortunately it's in my last month's folder. I didn't bring it tonight, but I can resend you the bullet.
I think I still.
You know what? But you know what? Joe might need more than the bullet points on why the changes. More the initial. If we could pull up the initial information that more explains the program. I mean, the changes are. Just as Manna described, but it sounds like you would be more served by reading about the program itself and what the program itself is set up
exactly.
to do.
Yep.
So we can get you that information for sure.
Okay. And I just want to clarify, I'm sorry, on the gold sheet I did have the wrong date on the gold sheet too, although it's right on the resolution inside. So I corrected that, and you're approving the proposed local law as amended here tonight. Just for the record on the tape, I wanted it to be clear.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. I'll do my homework.
It's a good program.
Okay,
I'll get
Manna, the Climate Smart Committee update.
Okay, quick update on the Climate Smart Committee. You may remember we have 8 different goals. One is to try to get every single municipality in Ulster County to take the Climate Smart Pledge. And somebody just did. I don't remember. I know Esopus and Gardner did, but there was one more.
Which is Curly?
Maybe
Curly?
Maybe. Yeah.
Zero.
So. So we're well on our way to achieving that goal. So I think we've gone from a slight minority of towns to a slight to a healthy majority, but we still want to get every single town. The city and the county are not only climate smart communities, but they're now silver, which is really very ambitious and valuable in terms of mitigating the climate crisis. The second goal, and there are eight others, but we went over that, I think, last time. The second goal was to create an Ulster County Green Business Challenge. And the way it's going to work is we're about to train 44 volunteers, or the room holds 44, so with the trainers and the steering committee, but let's say approximately 30 volunteers in addition to a very strong team of people that have formed a subcommittee to implement this. We are working very collaboratively with Economic Development Agency and Energy and the Department of Energy and Cornell Cooperative Extension. They are represented on this steering committee. And then we have some of the best experts in the county that on May 24th will be training volunteers, and anyone who would like to come to that training is welcome. And what we're training volunteers to do is to have enough background information to go to businesses and help them decide what makes the most sense for them, whether an energy retrofit, whether changing out their lighting, whether changing their heating and air conditioning system, installing a solar system. Brett alone just installed a 196 kilowatt system on the roof of their building out on Ulster Avenue in Lake Katrine. And that is going to generate, I think they said, 1/6 of the energy that they use. And the return on investment is 7 years. And after that, everything is, you could look at it as profit or savings, however. And there are several other really good examples. And so then in June, working with the Economic Development Agency, we are going to have a launch and let the businesses know. But we want to get trained people ready to sort of hold the hands of the business. And if the business has a question, that we're calling them ambassadors. If the Green Building Challenge ambassador can't answer the question, they have a network of about 15 people that they can direct the business to. We will also, on the county website, list all of the businesses, all of the vendors that provide services the business might be looking for. So all of the solar installers. Another thing that people could do is decide to purchase 100% renewable energy locally generated from a community solar or from the hydro, what's it called, natural power. So the on the back are all the actions the businesses could take to qualify, and we're going to track that and at the end of the year be able to report off not only how many businesses participated, but how much greenhouse gas emissions were reduced. And Nick Vazda from the Department of Energy has a system to input that data and be able to keep track of it. So, you know, my feeling is that for, I don't know, the 3 years I've been chairing the Climate Smart Committee, we've been talking about and doing some constructive things about addressing climate change. But after what we saw you know, earlier this year and in the fall, the horrible hurricanes and the amount of devastation in the Caribbean and Florida and Texas and the fires on the West Coast, we are in such a crisis that we have to start taking significant action. And so anybody who is interested, you know, let me or Beta, who's on the committee, know. Or, I would say just show up on May 24th, but and it's no longer tentative. And we will also provide all the financing mechanisms that are available to businesses, not just PACE, but we've researched all of the banks that are willing to help fund this, and the county has a revolving loan program. And what's especially relevant, Tim is here, is we will be reaching out to the agency. Cornell Cooperative Extension is coordinating number 6. We've been talking about restaurants. Restaurants are other large food waste generators, like schools and hospitals, would either use the food bank or, as Mary suggested, send food waste to pig farmers, or, you know, what is not edible would be compostable, and to make arrangements to get it either to the expanded composting facility or one of the other composting facilities in the county. There are, I think, 4 that I know of, but there may be more. They're doing that research so that it'll be ready for the volunteers to have an educated conversation with businesses, organizations, or municipalities, and that would also include multifamily. So it could be anything from energy efficiency, you know, the seven things are listed here. We're changing number 7 to be a little more generic because a business may come up with something we didn't think of, but they can document how much greenhouse gas emissions they're saving. And then the very important thing is that there will be acknowledgement on the county website. They'll get a Pride of Ulster County Award, and it may be a group each month from September to December that are getting their prides. And then, you know, a door sticker that says, you know, we are part of the 2018. One of the members suggested that 6 months was not enough to get 100 businesses to take an action. I said, we have to get 100 businesses because next year is going to be 250. Anyway, but I think this is a real way to provide a service to the businesses, kind of hold their hand, and when there's a question that is beyond what a volunteer can answer, they know exactly where to direct them. And we're going to try to get summer interns to help coordinate this, because everybody else there has full-time jobs.
That's great.
Thank you. Any questions? I appreciate the opportunity to share this. It's really exciting. Tracy is volunteering to go through the process as a business. Legislator DeWan is going to take the training.
I think I'm going to take the training.
And I think the town of Marbletown, Supervisor Mike Baden was there, and they're thinking of doing some for the lighting retrofits. So we only have 97 to go.
So are you going to do some other trainings?
Because
that happens to be my mother's birthday, so I can't come.
After the training on May 24th, there will be a series of sort of graduate courses where we will drill down electric vehicles and charging stations as
well. So we have to take this one first?
You don't. No.
Okay.
You can test out.
But in the fall, by fall, there will be renewed interest, and also we've been working with SUNY New Paltz and SUNY Ulster, and they expect to be able to add in some student intern volunteers who will work on this. So, you know, if in the end we have 40 people working on this, it is really quite possible that we could get 100 businesses this year to take a significant action that they wouldn't have taken otherwise. You know, there, I was, this afternoon we had a little bit of a green, what's it called, a building science primer and a walkthrough of the old Marble Town Town Hall, because the food bank, the Hudson Valley Food Bank, is contracting with them. But it's vacant now, so they're looking at what energy efficiency measures they could take before the food bank moves in. And they did a very extensive energy audit. And but that precedes the launch, so that one doesn't count. But there are, you know, a lot of low-hanging fruit. And at the launch, we will be featuring the case studies of the people, of the businesses that, you know, like Bread Alone, are investing a lot of money, but the return on investment is 7 years, and the savings after that are, you know, really significant. And the greenhouse gas reduction is major. So I feel like, you know, in addition to making suggestions and tracking what the county is doing, which we've been having very productive discussions in Public Works, and that is one of the roles of the Climate Smart Committee, is to focus on the county itself, its operations. But this is a way to have Ulster County take real leadership. If this works as well as we hope, I think other counties will follow suit, and you know, each year we'll try to reach more and more businesses.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Madam, what date is the launch? Have you determined that yet?
We have not. We had we got a little sidetracked trying to really nail down the May 24th. So we're going to have an extra meeting between now and May 24th, because we have to... it'll be the... I think it'll be the second or fourth week in June, and at this point I'm thinking probably the fourth week, because the third week is the chamber breakfast, and that's pre-scheduled, and we don't want to compete with an existing breakfast for that a lot of businesses attend.
Okay, thank you, Madam.
Thank you.
The mayor from Kingston is here. You can join us if you'd like. If he just wants to do a little bit of time.
Well, thank you, everybody, and I know that you have already had a long day, and you've already spent a lot of time talking about the Resource Recovery Agency, and so I will give you guys just a written statement to add into the record, and so we don't have to go into real detail tonight, but I just want to mention a couple of things. You know, before I became mayor, I was the recycling coordinator for the City of Kingston for 10 years, served on the board of the Resource Recovery Agency for 3. I led the board for a year, and so I'm intimately familiar with the complexities of solid waste management, and I think that you all saw that tonight. You know, Tim and his crew here, they do a great job, and there's no easy task at hand, you know, when dealing with solid waste. And I think that my biggest thing that I wanted to express to the legislature this evening is that decisions related to solid waste also need to have the time and energy and kind of dialogue about them. And so I was really surprised when I read recently in the paper that the agency was looking to end single stream collection here at the agency. You know, I want to express to all of you the kind of impact that that would have to the City of Kingston. When we switched to single stream with the agency's blessing in 2011 to start this trek that we've made, you know, it was a joint decision, and it was one where we then hence invested over $1 million to be able to prepare our city with everything from recycling bins for all of our residents and businesses to mechanize trucks to be able to collect them. And once we saw this recycling program be so successful and see our recycling rates go up, we actually switched to containerized refuge containers and again started to see our trash go down as well through these initiatives. And one of the things that, you know, is great about the agency and why it was created was to centralize all of these solid waste management decisions to one county-led agency that could really make sure that the forethought was put into these really complicated decisions. And what I don't want to see happen is those decisions, again, start to be more decentralized. And I think having the city of Kingston have to go off on its own to find its own solutions and to work on these problems by ourselves, I think flies in the face of really what the agency was designed to do, which was to support our towns and city in making the best decisions possible and supporting those decisions and making sure that the infrastructure of this county and this county's agency was designed to do that and was there to be able to support us not only, you know, in this decade, but the next decades to come. And I just wanted to say that, and I think that, you know, my team and the public are in the city of Kingston, you know, are really concerned about this issue. They're going to come to the public hearing that the agency board is having to be able to express their concerns. And I just want, you know, the legislature to know that this is a serious issue. And I know Tracy and I and others served on the Recycling Oversight Committee of the county legislature, and I'm not sure how active that committee has been since we all met.
We were
it, right? Yeah. And I think that may be an opportunity as well. I mean, if there needs to be long-term discussions on what we're going to do with recyclables in the county, there is already a body that is supposed to be involved in that and has oversight over, you know, what is recyclable, how things are recycled. And I think that may be another opportunity for the legislature to get reinvigorated into how we're going to manage our solid waste going forward. And so I want to thank you for the opportunity tonight to be able to state that. And I look forward to working with the legislature and the agency as we try to figure out how best to move forward. I don't know if anyone has any questions for me, but that's
have you started the process of preparing for the possibility?
Yeah, and so we have, so the same company, Reef Community, that takes the agency single stream, we've been in contact with them. They have the full capability and interest in taking all of our single stream recycling. They will charge us the same rates that they charge the county. And, you know, we have conversations and are prepared to go that route. But I think what it would do to us is it would shift, you know, the burdens and also the skill set that the agency currently has in managing that to a local municipality. That, you know, again, our transfer station isn't designed to transfer goods. We basically closed our transfer station when we all, you know, started to use the agency as our main recycling facilities. And so, you know, I think it's our conversations with them basically said, you know, they said, we put $18 million into this plant in Beacon, and we're not walking away anytime soon because it's an $18 million investment that they made in this field, and it's not something that they can walk away from. And so they'll be there, and, you know, there are other companies out there. We've reached out to companies in Massachusetts and others where they take single stream recycling. But again, I think that these decisions shouldn't get put back on the local level, you know, without some serious consideration.
Do you have any plan whatsoever, any discussion ever, of going to dual stream, especially considering the fact that we're hearing that there's less and less places even offering the opportunity to take single stream? So this may not even be a decision that is thrust upon you by the URA or us or anybody else. It may be an inevitability.
I mean, I think that, you know, we have yet to see successful curbside collection models that have multiple streams. I think for many years, communities struggled with, you know, dual stream recycling and struggled to get their recycling rates up. When we switched to single stream, our recycling rates went up 30%. And if you look at New York City, you know, major cities across the country, you know, even Ithaca, one of the greenest cities in the state, you know, their single stream. If you look outside the city of Kingston, you know, our transfer stations are dying, right? The number of people that use transfer stations in this county has changed dramatically in the last 50 years. You know, that was the place to go. It was where you met on the weekends. That's where you met your friends. Everyone went and, you know, did. But now most people in this county, if you drive down any rural road in this county, you're now seeing county waste or waste management containers. All of those are also single stream. All of those have their own plants that they go to. And so really this impact that the agency is considering is really just impacting my residents in the city of Kingston. Every other resident, if my residents lived in the town of Ulster, or I, you know, have, they all can go ahead and have county waste and waste management, and, you know, they get single stream recycling and plan to still. You know, those companies don't plan on going back to dual or three streams. And so it's really just me that is really the one that's going to be impacted. There's some smaller haulers that I think still come here, but it's really just the city. I have 2,000 tons of recycling. That's all. I mean, it's a lot, you know. And you know, we just like any other hauler. You know, we struggle with contamination. We struggle with issues. You know, we have contamination rates that are, you know, 1 or 2%. You know, and we pay the agency when, you know, we have those contaminated loads. But again, you know, I think up right now we're up to, you know, 14 tons of contaminated recyclables that have come through the agency. Those have been, you know, charged to us. But 14 tons so far out of 2,000 is less than 1%. And that's good. You know, actually 5% is, you know, kind of industry standard for contamination. But we have a full-time code enforcement officer that goes out. Just this week alone sent 100 violations out to people that, you know, put plastic bags in when they weren't. No other town has that. No one's watching county waste or waste management. Like, no one's following the truck like we do in the city, you know. And we're, I think the agency staff has come to my staff and said, hey, you know, the city of Kingston, you guys are doing really good, actually. And that was just a few months ago. And I think that that's, it's something we struggle with. You know, we have a population that can't get to our transfer station. We have many people that don't have access, you know, to vehicles to be able to bring their own stuff to transfer stations. You know, and so we are their hauler. And that's something that, you know, puts us in a unique position. There are not many municipal haulers left. It's hard-pressed to find a municipal hauler now. We're the only ones in Ulster County. If you look to Dutchess, many people have privatized. And we just, we're kind of a last breed. But it's put us in a position where, you know, these decisions, not only do they impact, you know, our residents, but it also impacts our, you know, our bottom line in terms of taxpayers and what we can do with a 2% tax cap and all of that stuff. So I could go on forever. I know you guys have heard enough already tonight, so I just wanted to... Oh.
Kathy?
Well, I'm really struck by what you're saying, that you've really put your heart and soul into single stream. And I know that there are other people who put their heart and soul into trying to maximize the financial benefit from a multi-stream. And so I'm just wondering, and maybe the public hearing will help sort that out. It sounds like if you could be whole by doing single stream and not kind of putting it through a facility that is trying to do a different approach, maybe you each get to try to maximize the things you're going on, and maybe you pay for some of those services rather than paying a contamination fee. Because it sounds like you wouldn't have to pay that fee at a single stream facility. So I'm always looking to try to let people who are kind of committed to a way of doing things do it, as long as they don't get in each other's way. And I'm not hearing so much how you're hurt by a decision of another entity to say, we tried that and we don't think it's working for us.
Yeah. One of the things that I think we, as an agency, we did when as I was leaving the board, you know, we put together a solid waste management plan, which I'm not sure is ever actually approved yet by DEC, but so back in 2011. And so mm-hmm. we still don't have a plan for the county on how we're going to manage our solid waste going forward. But that said, I think one of the things with single stream is the more it's handled, the more risk you have for contamination. You know, and mostly glass. Glass breaks into the paper then becomes less valuable. The more it's handled, the more it's dumped, the more it breaks. And right now, our single stream recycling is coming here, getting loaded with a front end loader, dumped into a trailer, trucked to a place in Beacon, dumped on the floor. Another front end loader picks it up, dumps it into a machine, gets sorted, right? Material happens along the way. You know, one of the proposals, and it's in the plan, was to look at, you know, should our agency invest the money to have our own plant that manages just our own waste here in Ulster County in terms of single stream? And so, obviously, a decision was made with flow control to just flow control garbage and not to flow control recyclables. But if we had our own plant here, we would have much more control over the quantity and the salability, if you would, of this material. Because one, you know, you would know that it was coming from my truck on Broadway in Kingston directly to a plant here and would get sorted right here. And then those materials would be able to be baled and sold by this agency, you know, and in some years to a profit, other years maybe not as much. But, you know, that I believe is really the ideal for this facility. I mean, if you look at how often the MRF is managed and turned on now, the amount of material coming from our transfer stations in the towns really can't help pay the bills either. I mean, if it runs 1 or 2 days a week, it's probably a lot these days. And so if you look at that, that's changed a lot. It used to have 2 shifts when I was initially on the board, and now it's barely running. And it's just because most people are getting private haulers, and the material is not staying here, and all of our recyclables are leaving the county. And so we lose control of that. We then can't manage our own goods. We can't, you know, crack down on people who are not being good about recycling. We can't crack down on what's going in the bins as much, because we really, to be honest, we don't care. We just pack it into a truck and ship it out, and we don't care where it goes, and we don't know how what happens to it when it ends up there, you know, because it's unlike solid waste, which we really care about. Like, we care about every single pound, because we know it goes to Seneca Meadows, we know how much it costs, we know that eventually it's going to get filled, we know we need to have composting become more mainstream, but with recycling, we just are moving it out.
Just one, I mean, I'm looking forward to the public hearing to hear everything that's going on and to hear all perspectives, and you and I did serve many years ago, but just I want to bring one point of clarification for anyone who's not aware, is that we, Ulster County, are the only county in the state that we are explicitly prohibited from having flow control on recyclables. It's in our enabling legislation. So it wasn't a choice that was made, although there have been discussions, so that the legislature has not yet taken action to ask for a change to that enabling legislation, which is what it would require. I have advocated for that, even to the extent both of what Steve's talking about stewardship over the whole process, but even from the perspective of being the one anomaly in the state, just giving ourselves that option should we get to a point where we needed to keep control for regulating, regulation abilities, et cetera. As it stands right now, we cannot do that. We would have to ask for a change in state enabling legislation. So I just want everyone to be clear, it wasn't a decision that we bantered about. And no one, and actually, the attorney Cahill, who did the Cash and Cahill study, said he had no idea why our enabling legislation was written that way. Maybe there were special interests at the time that were advocating to keep it out, because it's a standalone example in the state.
Amanda? I'd love to hear what Tim has to say. So sorry.
I'm sorry. Amanda, and then we.
Yeah. I just want to say that, first of all, I work in Beacon, and there the hauler. This is curbside. The hauler collects the garbage from a dumpster, and we have containers for cardboard, all other paper, and then the commingled. And that's a curbside collection, so it is a city. It can be done, the multi-stream idea. Also, I'm very concerned about the fact that a lot, not all, there are some single-stream recycling processing facilities that are able to get fairly good quality material, but with what is happening in China, I don't think that things are going to get much better in terms of single-stream I personally thought it was a mistake. And I just want to, the last thing I want to say is that there are trucks that, like, two-thirds of the back of the packer is for garbage and a third is for recycling. And then when your recycling rate gets higher, you can switch it. The same number of drivers and routes, one week you pick up the paper, and the next week you pick up the commingled bottles and cans, and that tends to result in a much better product. And ultimately, it could actually be, and this is done in Europe, one week you do garbage and whatever recycling is most appropriate to fit on the truck, and the next time you do food waste and yard waste and the other category of recycling. So I think there are potential solutions, and, you know, we do have to work with what we have, but I'm very concerned that the recycling market is not going to get better. And Tim gave us some pretty startling numbers that he's just received on the tour. I don't know whether he's spoken with you about them, but I just think for the record, you know, the single-stream recyclables were marketable, and then they stopped being marketable, and then they were being charged, and that charge has gone up. And now with China putting up, what is it, the green fence?
This is the national sword now.
I just don't see it getting better, and I think this is a reality we're going to have to face and collectively come up with the best solution.
Can Steve respond to that? Because we've heard, in essence, that that there's this problem with China and there's contaminated loads and routes. So how do you respond to that? Because whereas you're telling us that you're having trouble offloading the single stream material, and that you're concerned that China one won't accept it and other places won't accept it, and Steve's saying that he's contacted these places that will take single stream, and there doesn't seem to be the same kind of concern about cost.
Well, he said, well, maybe Tim should respond to that.
Well, maybe we should just hear what the costs are. Because
if I can tell you, the cost that the mayor receives is the same cost that we're getting. Mm-hmm. Does that include trucking?
It's $25 a ton, they said.
Additional,
yeah.
Okay, so that's $76 a ton.
Yeah.
We're paying $51 a ton with the trucking. Yeah. So we're getting actually a better rate. But I was told that this week it's probably going to jump to $70. So that's going to be more in line with what you were told. You're at $76. if I haven't gotten the bill yet, but I was told it's going to jump to $70, so that'll put us pretty close to what you were told. And they also told us they're going to limit us to two trucks. After we argued with them, because I can't get by in just two trucks a day. I can't do it. I'm going to turn city case and trucks away if that's all they're going to limit me to. After arguing with them, they backed off and they said on Wednesdays we're only going to take two trucks. The other days we'll take up to three. So if I got to hold some in a trailer someplace on Wednesday night and then offload it, you know, on Thursday morning and ship it out, that's what I'll do. I just got to keep trying to move the product as much as I can.
But the argument is that this is, single stream is unsustainable. That's the argument, and I wonder how you respond to that.
And so I think that's right. So if the agency believes that single stream is unsustainable and that it's going to go away, you know, I think as an agency, the agency and the county has to then come up with a plan, because it shouldn't just be about my 2,000 tons. It should be about the thousands and thousands and thousands of tons that county waste pick up from your residents and your residents and your residents, your residents and waste management's tons and everybody's tons, right? And so what are they going to do with theirs? And so if they can still figure out how to deal with it and the residents aren't screaming at you because their rates are being raised, right? So if what I don't understand is, you know, if we are having this issue locally between the city of Kingston and the agency and Reed Community and Beacon, but and our rates are going from $20 a ton to $70 a ton. I would like the county to find out, well, what is County Waste and Waste Management going to do to all of your residents? Because I would assume that that $35 a month that they're paying for recycling and trash service, that should be going up too. And so it becomes a much larger county discussion because it's really not just about me anymore. Yes, I'm directly impacted because this is where I bring it. But what's going to happen with the rest of our county? And that's, I think, something that what is frustrating me most is that this is becoming a very specific City of Kingston-focused issue. And clearly, yes, I'm the one that will have, and come January 1st, I'll have no place to bring my stuff. But what about everybody else? And how are we going to manage this from a county perspective going forward is, I think, an open question that is going to need a lot of research and a lot of time. And I think that that's my biggest thing, is that just having a public hearing in 2 weeks and then making a decision at the May meeting is not enough time. And that's a big point that I'm trying to get across to everybody.
If I can just enlighten everybody in regard to waste management, they're close to single stream facilities in Liverpool, right outside of Syracuse. They stopped shipping it there because they were losing a ton of money. So they actually started sending it to Reed Community, one of their competitors, because it was close. You remember this industry, a lot of it's about the trucking. All right. They contacted me last week, and they want to bring it here. The waste management does. And I said, I'm just barely squeaking by as it is. I can't take anymore. But they're looking for an outlet because the markets are so bad. So they wanted, because they heard we were charging $20 a ton. So they said, well, you take the barrels, you can take the bus. I said, no, I can't do it. I'm just barely keeping my head above water as it is. So I said, you're going to have to find someplace else. Keep taking it to Reed Community. And that's good that Reed Community said they would take yours. For them, you're taking a quarter out of one pocket and putting it in the other. Because whether or not the city brings it here or the city brings it to Reed Community, it's the same bottom line of buying. So they're not increasing their volume. That's the same thing.
I just want to make a very quick point. I know everybody wants to get out of here. We are now having discussion. One of the things that we're doing on the board is we're sort of looking at the old. We understand the mayor's got very specific concerns and a lot of specific knowledge on the ground. We're looking at a lot of overall sort of the way things are going. And I just want to throw an idea out there. I know everybody feels this is very, very abrupt. And by the way, there's a chance we may not vote this month. We'll see what happens. We very much want to hear this. We very much want to continue the discussion. But one of the things that I felt is, if we were to pick, let's say, a January 1st date, or whatever date the industry lays on us that it really gets cut off, part of what I would just tell the board that we're doing is sending this flare up as soon as possible. This gives us as long as possible to make a decision, instead of waiting till, if we had this discussion on November 1st, that would be kind of crisis mode. I also want to let everybody know that to the extent that we're looking at all these issues, the price is going down, the intelligence that Tim brings us every month. We had a discussion in here a couple of days ago with DEC, because one of the things that we have to look at as the officials that are running this facility is what happens if those rates go up and those trucks go down, and we have to start accumulating the waste, whether it's from the city or from the other haulers. And there's only a couple of things that can happen to it. Currently, DEC does not let us put this in the waste stream as MSW. It's got to be treated as recycling. We cannot throw it out. Mm-hmm. And so it comes in here. If the market won't pay for it, what do we do? And the discussion that we have, and DEC still is up, they will not let us throw it out. They want to keep it separate. So the discussion that we had a couple of days ago, and ultimately they went out to the facility with Charlie Whitaker, and they looked around and said, the question now is, how much are we going to be allowed to accumulate it in our facility? That's the state of the discussions right now. And so the point is, we are looking, the board is going to be looking, we're certainly going to hear from the mayor, we're certainly going to hear from the people of Kingston, we want to hear about the budgetary issues, we want to hear about all these things, but the point is to get this conversation started as soon as possible so we can make the best long-term decision we can, and we're going to be looking at all of these issues. And I want to let everybody know, the discussion now with DEC is, where do we pile it up? How long can we pile it up for? And please, at some point, start thinking the unthinkable, which is that we have to start throwing out this recycling, because it's at some point, and I discussed it with the DEC officials, at some point, if people won't accept it, it's not really recycling. Again, This is the first stage of the discussion. We're going to be talking about this much more down the road. We're setting up a flare right now so we can start these discussions. We don't have to vote this month. We'll see what happens. But we have a responsibility to look at the overall trends here. And, you know, the funny thing is we see it in the market now. We see the market prices. And we also see the overall reason why. The overall reason why is because the one place that was demanding this is sending us a very, very clear message that they're not doing it anymore, and they're telling us why. And so you have a complete communication at this point. If we're wrong, if things are different, if the mayor's identified places that will accept it, that a reasonable trucking rates, et cetera, we're willing to hear it. But, you know, we're going to be evaluating all this evidence, and ultimately we have to make a decision, at least for this facility. And I also want to echo what the mayor said. To the extent that the legislature wants to get involved and make this more of a county issue, we will certainly hear what we have to say, and we'll certainly enter into that conversation.
Tracy. I too know it's getting late, but the one other thing that struck me in the conversation is when you think about, and it's some of what the mayor brought up about the difference between the city of Kingston and the private haulers. When I think of those two entities, I think of the obvious transparency of government. I think it's a higher burden in some ways than in a private company. And so one point that I'd just like to put out for the board as well is, as we're facing in these difficult times and the mayor's saying, what's happening with everyone else, one question I have is, how are we going, especially given that we don't have flow control over regulated recyclables? We have recycling laws, as you've pointed out, that are both local laws, and then we have state regs that say you cannot throw this out. Our laws are pretty strict. But how... And I'm not saying anyone's going to do this, but how do we verify that the trucks that are leaving our county by private haulers are actually going to be recycled versus ending up in landfills without our knowledge? Because they would be violating county law. If they create recyclables in our county, pack them into a truck, and drive away and throw them away as waste, that is a violation of our county law that requires that they be recycled. So, and I'm not asking for an answer right now. I'm just saying, how does the agency and how is the board addressing that potential concern? Because, I don't know the answer, and I don't know what.
Do you have an answer? To that?
Yeah, if you can.
I have an answer for that. We have to submit an annual recycling report to DEC every year, and we have to obtain that information from all the haulers. So they're telling us where they're taking the solid waste, the solid waste is now coming here, but where they're taking the C&D, where they're taking the recyclables.
But are we verifying, are they just saying, this is where I took it?
Yes.
Or are we, right, that's not a verified response.
No,
you know, if someone says, I created 5,000 tons, I took 5,000 tons of recyclables to XYZ, unless you're verifying the receipts and requiring proof, we actually don't know. It's like an unaudited thing. It's just So
we take them for the word.
Well, that may be too little in times of very difficult financial and volume crunches. I mean, it just may be too little to take anyone at their word.
In fact, the numbers are chilling. If it costs us or somebody else $60 or $70 a ton to throw out a ton of garbage, and it costs them $70 a ton to recycle it, at some point, you know, especially a private hauler,
That's what I'm saying.
The number's going to tell you where it's going to end up, and no matter what we do.
And this brings us full circle to the fact that we... By definition, by enabling legislation right now, cannot have total control of our solid waste stream, but also I think highlights the need that we continue to talk about needing to have a full system.
Mary, we also need DEC to expand the permits because we're very limited on what we can take because of the permits from DEC. So, I mean, it's having DEC come in and expand the permits that we have so we can take the additional solid waste. That's a great problem that we have to address.
Brian?
Yeah, one thing I would ask the RA board to consider is, in light that the public hearing is only 20 days from today, and hasn't been a lot of time for people to really look through this fully, is that there may be a second public hearing set up, and if not, if there can't be, there should be an extended public comment period where the RRA accepts comment from members of the public, you know, maybe whether it be written or emailed or set up through that way. I think that's very important. At least the stakeholders would feel that they have had some kind of voice in this. And if a public hearing, I believe, public hearing is scheduled for this here, I believe.
Well, I think that's definitely have to be thought.
Well, I think so.
I would
suggest it be maybe try to schedule it somewhere within the city of Kingston, since that population is going to be one of the most directly impacted. And also a lot of people in Kingston would find it difficult getting with transportation issues and other. It would be more convenient for them to have it in a location where they can get.
Yeah, Mary, can we reach out to the legislature about the possibility of the chambers and maybe reach back to the.
I personally speak for myself. I'm very interested in hearing from as many people as possible. Obviously, this room is going to be too small.
Yeah, Claude, we can check into availability.
I'll check the schedule and get back to them about the location.
And it's getting late, so we're just going to take one more. Lynn,
might just a clarification question, and that to sort of reduce all this complexity. So the argument is that single stream is unsustainable, and Steve's response is it's all unsustainable. Am I getting that right? And that we better start talking, and it would be really smart instead of just sort of pointing out Kingston saying you've chosen this path, single stream, we can't do anything. It sounds like none of it's really sustainable. And we've got two options here. Kingston can sort of go off on its own and manage this until we figure out some, or we can regroup here and really think about what we're going to do about the totality of it. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. All right. I just wanted for my own.
Yep. Thank you.
Mary, would you humor me for one sentence?
Sure.
What I think this creates is an economic opportunity. The fact that we've been so reliant on China violates a very basic principle of local self-reliance. And whatever it takes, New York State has got to address not just Ulster County, because I'm not sure that we can put up enough recycling facilities here in Ulster County. But in New York State or in this area, we have got to, I know we used to send our waste paper to Markau in New Jersey. And if it's going to China, you know, there's something wrong. And I really think that there is recycling makes sense. Taking products and reusing them in other, you know,
and other
products.
Countries. Yeah. Other countries are doing it.
That's right. It's not just. Single stream, I understand even cardboard is going to China and then getting shipped back as boxes. So I really think as Mayor Noble has said, this is bigger. The agency has to decide for Ulster County, but this is a bigger problem, and I promised one sentence. I really do think we have to start putting that in.
That's a really run-on sentence.
I don't want to.
Sure. Jack?
Following up on MATA, this is a global problem. This is garbage backing up all over the world. And China's running the show. I think we need to incorporate the federal government and state government in saying China can't overpackage anymore. They can't overpackage with garbage type of materials, and which increases our load. We're on the tail end. It's got to stop. It's got to stop at point of origin. And if Joe Maloney wanted to see a significant change, it would change at point of origin. That is probably our best point to realize a reduction in what's coming in. Because if we reduce what's coming in, we have less to recycle, less to throw away. So we've got to have some balance here. We're at the tail end of this whole situation. And it's not Ulster County. It's not the city of Kingston. It's way beyond that. And what we've got to get is some motivated people. You know, trade may be a little bit testy now, but this is part of trade. We're doing trade, which is dirty and garbage. We're getting too much of the dirty and garbage, and we need it to clean up where it's coming from, because they're making an awful lot of money from us. Their whole economy is going wonderful, but we're picking up a lot of the load for their benefit. So while we have a parochial problem at this point, it's not really. It is big. And I think we have to follow up on, we have sent correspondence to federal officials back last year. This didn't happen yesterday. It didn't happen in May, and it didn't happen in April. We've been talking about National Sword for over a year. We saw it coming. We were talking about it at the SWANA conference last May. This is really big, really hard, and it's going to take a lot of people to fix it. And it should be on the top of the agenda, really, at the highest levels. So,
thank
my
you.
My 2 cents.
Okay, thank you, everyone, for a nice thank and you. Long motion meeting, but I think it was productive.
Do we have motion?
A motion?
Second.
Second?
Motion.
I second.
So who made the motion?
Brian and I second.
Okay.
Thank you, everyone.
And it is 9:24.